Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Herbal Medic, a Green Beret's Guide to Emergency Medical Preparedness and Natural First Aid, by Sam Kaufman. Narrated by David Marantz. Publisher's Note: In this audio edition, you will hear references to common and Latin names of listed and not listed materia medica herbs present in the print and e-book formats of the book. Preface. I remember hearing the sound of my bone breaking as I hit the ground, hands outstretched. It hadn't been a very impressive jump, but my mountain bike hit a patch of sand as I landed, and over the handlebars I went. The resulting collision pulled a piece of bone away from the base of my thumb on my left hand in a classic avulsion fracture. I had arrived at Fort Bragg a few days earlier, having made it through the Special Forces Assessment and Selection, SFAS, or Sore Feet and Shoulders, as we called it, and Airborne School of the Qualification Course for the U.S. Special Forces. After 8 months at Fort Sam Houston in Texas training as a battlefield medic, I was facing Med Lab, a whole new level of training and experience. This program was designed to produce the best austere medics in the military and to wash out anyone who could not handle the pressure. Austere here means operating with limited supplies and support. More than half of my original class was already gone. This second phase would be worse, and here I was in the middle of the woods with a broken thumb less than a week before starting the most arduous training I would ever undergo. After several hours of denial, I went over to the Med Lab compound and x-rayed the thumb myself. Sure enough, I had a prominent avulsion fracture, with several millimeters of separation between the bone and the large piece that had been separated from it. At this point, I realized that I needed to see a doctor, so I went to the post's hospital, where the orthopedist told me I needed surgery and would have to postpone the hands-on training. I stubbornly insisted that he just put a cast on it, because my son's third birthday was coming up, and delaying my training would mean missing more time with him. After some arguing and against the surgeon's better judgment, he agreed to put on a cast. I went back to the barracks, where I promptly cut the cast off and got a ride into town where I'd noticed a store that carried bulk herbs. I bought a pound each of comfrey, Symphidum officinale, and horsetail, Esquicetum species. Using big gauze pads held in place by an elastic wrap bandage, I soaked my thumb with the wet poultice of both herbs almost 24/7. When I reported for the first session of Goat Lab, so-called because we worked on live animals, I was relieved to find myself assigned to the half of the class that was learning lab techniques rather than practicing treatment of trauma. This meant that I had a 3-week reprieve before I would have to use my broken thumb in daily trauma scenarios. The instructors knew that I had a broken thumb and were undoubtedly just waiting to see what would happen. But I was convinced that I could make it if the thumb would heal enough to allow me some grip strength. During trauma training, we worked with goats who were fully anesthetized and then given life-threatening injuries, from blocked airways to fully eviscerated intestines spurting arterial blood. These scenarios ran all day, every day, and my thumb would ache for hours after, for example, using kung fu grip strength with my left hand to align and expose the trachea for the scalpel in my right hand. Thanks to the amazing tissue proliferation brought on by the comfrey and horsetail, my thumb had healed rapidly, and I continued the poultices for another month into the course. By the time I was getting ready for the next phase, I had full grip strength back and only minor pain when stretching my thumb in certain directions. To this day, I have no arthritis or pain or difference in grip strength between my right and left hands. That injury was my rite of passage into herbal medicine. I had been interested in medicinal herbs prior to my Special Forces training, and I had studied just enough to know that comfrey and horsetail were reputed to be extremely effective in healing a broken bone. However, experiencing rapid healing myself in a situation of very high stress gave me a whole new level of appreciation for and trust in herbs as medicine. I continued to study herbal medicine, and it balanced all of the orthodox medicine I was learning as a special forces medic. I love medicine for many reasons, but one of the biggest is the way it challenges you to keep learning. When you study medicine, whether you are in medical school or teaching yourself herbal medicine from books or anywhere in between, you are on a path that will never end for as long as you choose to follow it. More importantly, you can choose the direction you want to travel. Nobody has all the answers in the world of medicine, and you will never learn all there is to learn on this subject. When I began to study herbal medicine in earnest, my own ways of thinking about how the body heals began to expand. My ideas about the physiology and pathophysiology of the body as it relates to herbal medicine have evolved over the years, and I work with doctors who put my ideas to the test every single day. The more they work with herbal medicine, the more they keep returning because it is so effective. Herbal medicine provides some wonderful backstops to many of the holes that exist in conventional medicine today, and these are holes not only in the actual medicine itself, but also in regard to its availability in a healthcare system that is filled with flaws. I hope that my own experiences in the world of herbal medicine over the past 30 years will prove useful. Introduction. While this is a book about herbal medicine, it fully embraces the need for a solid foundation in emergency and orthodox medicine for anyone working in healthcare. The heart and soul of the concept of the herbal medic is grounded in the idea that medicine should be as sustainable as possible, while also being accessible to everyone. The herbal medic should ideally be able to work with the medicine that grows in forests, deserts, jungles, and of course, our own gardens. However, the herbal medic also needs a thorough understanding of disease and injury from an orthodox point of view. This is essential for acknowledging the need to seek higher medical care when a medical situation is beyond our ability to help. However, in my experience, there is a helpful application from the world of plant medicine for nearly every illness or injury. It might be herbs to help with nausea from chemotherapy, or an herbal formula that is far more effective than expensive pharmaceuticals for a viral infection. It could be herbs to help a bone fracture heal, or herbs to help with the respiratory difficulty of asthma. The spectrum of health issues that can be addressed with herbal medicine is huge. So too is the spectrum of effectiveness, depending on the condition, underlying factors, for example, nutrition, lifestyle, age, health conditions, what herbs are used, and how those herbs are used. With that in mind, it is likely that the listeners of this book will come from many backgrounds. Some may be doctors or otherwise licensed healthcare providers. Some may be clinical herbalists. Some may be folks who are concerned with preparedness for disaster. Some may be herbal hobbyists who are just starting on their own journey to explore plant medicine. Whatever your background, the purpose of this book is to define and teach all aspects of being an herbal medic, both in the field and at home. Outside of basic first aid skills, the medicine we will discuss is specifically plant medicine. I believe that the herbal medic should be prepared to be the primary caregiver, not just in the first few minutes of an injury or illness, but for the first few hours or days, and potentially even for weeks and maybe months, depending on the situation. That's why this book is written primarily for an audience living and working in remote locations or interested in preparing for post-disaster scenarios. That said, the foundation of practical herbalism is also very useful around the average home, and the information provided here can be used by professionals of all background and training, from doctors, nurse practitioners, and nurses to clinical herbalists. But above all, this book is intended to help anyone and everyone who desires greater self-reliance and sustainability in their own health care. Using this book. You can listen to this book from cover to cover, and you can also use it as a reference manual. The Index, Glossary, and Materia Medica offer easy access to definitions, explanations of concepts, first aid instructions, and plant profiles. It is impossible to teach herbal medicine concepts without first introducing certain cultural understandings and vocabulary from the world of plant medicine. This is true whether you are working with trauma, acute or chronic illness, or recovery from trauma or surgery. The first thing you must realize is that in the tradition of Western or Orthodox medicine, our understanding is shaped primarily by pharmaceutical medicine. Plant medicine arises from an entirely different context of holistic, multifaceted healing. As an example, even though aspirin is derived from constituents found in willow bark, Salix species, you can't simply apply willow bark in the same way you would administer aspirin. From the perspective of plant medicine, using a single constituent, in this case salicylic acid, out of the thousands of constituents found in willow bark, is nowhere near as effective as using the whole plant, understanding the mechanism of inflammation, and taking advantage of the ways in which many different herbs can work through various pathways in the body to help heal inflammation. This book is designed to create a foundation and then build on it. Part 1 concentrates on orthodox topics such as creating first aid kits, bandaging and splinting, and supporting musculoskeletal injuries. Part 2 explores some of the most important aspects of working with herbs, beginning with a basic understanding of the body. How do we approach an upper respiratory tract infection versus a urinary tract infection? Can one herb have different effects on different organs? What are the most effective ways to help different types of tissue heal? How do we make medicine from herbs? What is a formula, and how do we figure out which herbs to combine for a specific formula? Understanding the process of disease provides a foundation for understanding the larger process of working with illnesses and injuries. A well-designed healing protocol may involve not just herbal medicine, but also lifestyle adjustments, nutrition, stress management, and more. As we look at organ systems, we will also talk about the causative factors in disease, in particular, chronic disease. First aid is the mainstay of the herbal medic. First aid is to acute illness and injury what nutrition and an understanding of organs and pathophysiology are to chronic illness. And so Part 3 covers topics that can be described as herbal first aid in action. Here you'll learn how to assess and treat injuries, infections, illnesses, and more. It is vital that you have some understanding of how to implement these methods in a post-disaster or remote environment in order to be an effective herbal medic, both in the field and at home. In Part 4, we move into the Materia Medica, a list of plants that are used medicinally. It includes 70 herbs that I use frequently, listed by common name. Information includes the parts of the plant used, medicinal uses, and preparation/administration protocols. Most are native to or can be cultivated in North America, though some are found more commonly outside this continent. All of them can be purchased as dried herbs in bulk from herb suppliers. Why herbal medic? I've been fascinated with the concept of the herbal medic for over 2 decades. Medics respond to any type of complaint of someone seeking medical care in the field, including trauma or acute illness. A medic, by my own definition and experience, can be a first responder, a doctor, a nurse, a counselor, a paramedic, a critical care health provider, or any combination of these. Aside from stabilizing injuries and wounds and providing initial treatment for any range of health care issues, the medic also has to provide continued advanced first aid and emotional support while documenting a patient's condition and care. The medic monitors the patient until handing them off to higher care. An herbal medic can perform many or even all of those tasks using plant medicine instead of pharmaceuticals. Herbal medics must be able to identify plants, know how to extract medicine from them, and understand how to apply those medicines correctly. Knowledge of herbal medicine is useful around the home, on the trail, and in the wilderness. It can be vital in places where pharmaceutical medicine is limited, and it can be life-saving in post-disaster situations when people are desperate, the rule of law has been abandoned, and food, water, and medicine, not necessarily in that order, are among the first things to be looted or taken by force. In any austere environment, even if you do have pharmaceutical medicine available, you have to know how to administer it correctly and how to deal with rationing what you use, which can create all sorts of unexpected issues. Plant medicine is truly a living medicine. While we can, to a limited extent, break down the actions of constituents inside the plant, we are not able to quantify the effects of living medicine, sometimes called vitalism, in the same way. The efficacy of any herb will vary depending on where it grows, the soil and other conditions it grows in, how and when it is harvested, and how it is prepared, formulated, and dosed. An herbalist must have a relationship with and understanding of plant life and its interaction with the human species. Human beings have coexisted with, co-evolved with, and relied upon plant food and medicine for the entire duration of the existence of our species. That relationship is deeper than we can duplicate with a pharmaceutical drug, a vitamin tablet, or even an encapsulated herb. That relationship is vital for our health, in fact. As the myriad chronic diseases and inflammation-related disorders in our population right now show us, our health is intrinsically connected to the health of the soil and the plants around us. Herbal medicine offers us a rooted connection back to the world that we rely on for our food, our clean air, our clean water, and, of course, our plant medicine. Part 1. Orthodox First Aid. Chapter 1. The First Aid Kit. Becoming an herbal medic begins with a basic understanding of what I would call orthodox first aid. Anyone listening to this book certainly knows how to put on a Band-Aid and why it's important to wash a scraped knee to clean off the dirt. Beyond that, it depends on your experience. Experience and knowledge are probably the most important tools in any first aid kit. It is usually a waste of space to pack anything you don't know how to use. In fact, you can evaluate your first aid skills just by packing your kit. In doing so, you can also learn more about how to use your equipment for multi-purpose applications, which means that you will be better prepared to handle emergency situations when resources are scarce. Let's say that you are preparing for a camping trip. You have an empty day pack and a bunch of first aid gear spread out in front of you. You start trying to decide which items are necessary, which items are too heavy to be worth carrying, and so on. Take that fancy aluminum finger splint. It seems bulky. How often would you need it? How would you use it? Are there alternatives? Is it used just for fingers? What about toes? Do you need a splint like this one but for toes? So many questions. So perhaps you do a little research and you learn about buddy splinting, where an injured finger or toe is taped to the finger or toe next to it. Since you're bringing tape anyway, you decide to leave the finger splint at home. Whatever items you put in your kit, you should already have used each of them at least once so that you're familiar with how to open the packaging, prep them, and apply them. If you're buying a new item for your kit, such as a compression bandage or tourniquet, buy two. One for your kit and one to practice using. Ideally, you should be able to use all the items even in high-stress and low-light situations. Finally, it's important to actually use your kit. This ensures that you are using and replacing items so that your supplies are always relatively new, and it also means that you know exactly what you have in stock and where each item is located. Let there be light. To test your first aid kit in real-world conditions, take it into a dark room and then have someone invent an injury that urgently needs treatment. How long does it take before you have the correct materials in your hands, opened and ready to use? Time yourself. This exercise should alert you to the fact that one of the most important items to have readily available in your kit is some form of light, such as a headlamp, preferably, or a flashlight. You can't count on only needing your kit at a picnic on a warm, sunny day where everyone is calm, cool, and collected. You may well find yourself at the scene of a car wreck in the middle of the night, with pouring rain and a screaming adrenaline rush. Prepare and pack your first aid kit so that the worst-case scenarios are manageable and the best-case scenarios are a breeze. Supplies and tools. Let's run through a list of common first aid tools and supplies, including their specific uses. Bear in mind that in any kit, space and carrying weight is at a premium. In my experience, the more multi-purpose items a first aid kit has, the more complete the kit will be. Try to keep any single-purpose pieces of equipment restricted to items that are high-efficiency life-saving gear, like ready-made chest seal occlusive dressings and ready-made tourniquets, where saving even a few extra seconds by having exactly the right tool at hand may make a difference. Tape. Athletic tape. It doesn't stretch, sticks well to skin, and has a good torsion strength, ability to withstand a twisting load. This means that it lends itself well to being a musculoskeletal support for injured joints, muscles, bones, and connective tissue, like a sprained ankle. A 1.5 or 2-inch roll is most useful for taping, bandaging, and splinting. Kinesiology tape. K-tape, as it's often called, or KT tape, after the popular brand, is designed to provide support without limiting movement. It is not as strong as athletic tape, but is very useful for supporting injured but non-weight-bearing joints and musculoskeletal structures that need to remain functional for repeated flexion and extension. You might, for example, use K-tape to support sprained wrists, shoulders, ribs, and fingers. Medical/surgical tape. It's strong and doesn't stretch, and it's usually gentler on the skin than athletic tape or K-tape. It can be used to hold bandages on the skin and as a backup for athletic tape if necessary. I usually stock DuraPore surgical tape in my kit. Adhesive wound closure strips. Wound closure strips, sometimes called Steristrips after the 3M brand, can be easily made from medical tape, or any type of tape really, but the ready-made versions take up almost no room and weigh next to nothing. They're also packaged in a way that allows them to be very easily applied. They're designed to help close small lacerations, pulling together the skin on either side of the wound. Duct tape. Duct tape has a multitude of uses for first aid and beyond, well beyond. It can stand in for athletic or even medical tape if necessary, though its adhesive is not gentle on the skin. From making slit-style sunglasses to taping sticks together for an improvised field litter, it is a good multi-purpose tape to have in any survival and/or medical kit. Make a small roll by rolling about 10 to 20 feet of duct tape around a pencil. Before you start rolling, fold the adhesive side back on itself for the first few inches so that the first couple of rounds of tape around the pencil don't stick and you can pull off the whole roll when you are finished. Bandages and wraps. Band-aids. These small adhesive bandages, or band-aids as most of us call them, after the brand name product, are probably the most obvious items to include in a first aid kit, but it always surprises me how many times they are needed in various sizes in the field. Their primary purpose is usually to keep an injury as clean as possible. They are far easier and faster to apply than tape and gauze, and I recommend having them in a variety of sizes. Moleskin. Moleskin is pretty well known as a preventative and treatment for blisters. However, it is also useful for preventing chafing anywhere on the body where you might expect a lot of friction. consider packing it with tincture of benzoin, which comes in small vials with a cotton applicator, which works well as an organic glue to adhere the moleskin more securely, even to wet skin. Gauze. Gauze is critical for covering wounds, packing and providing pressure on hemorrhages, protecting burns, and more. It is also extremely useful for making herbal poultices and plasters. Pack a variety of sizes of gauze dressings, from 4x4 inch to 2x2 inch, and also a gauze roll. Elastic wrap. Elastic wrap, sometimes called an ACE bandage after the brand name product, has a multitude of uses, from holding splints, bandages, and poultices in place, to providing compression around soft tissue injuries and more. The classic gauze plus elastic wrap combination makes a very functional compression bandage over arterial bleeds, usually as good as any pre-made compression bandages on the market. As an added benefit, elastic wrap can be washed and even sterilized in boiling water for multiple uses. The 2- and 3-inch rolls are most useful. Self-adhesive vet wrap. Vet wrap, such as Coban, is very useful, particularly for bandaging minor lacerations, abrasions, and burns. Because it is stretchy, can be torn or cut, and sticks to itself, it makes a great fast wrap for everything from buddy splinting fingers and toes to bandaging dressings over a deep laceration. Vet wrap gets its name from the fact that it is often used by veterinarians, but it works just as well for humans. Unlike elastic wrap, vet wrap is normally only single use, and it's not as strong, although it's still strong enough to impede circulation if you accidentally wrap it too tightly, but it's very easy to use. Compression bandage / pressure dressing. Pre-made compression bandages, sometimes called pressure dressings, are generally designed for one-time use, but they're helpful to have in the event of life-threatening trauma because you can unwrap and apply them very quickly. I like the Olias modular bandage, which has at least 4 separate uses. You can use it as a compression bandage, you can pull out its sterile gauze and use it to pack a wound, you can repurpose its plastic sheet for use as an occlusive dressing, and you could conceivably convert its plastic cup, used for point pressure, to an eyewash cup. Cravat bandage. A cravat bandage, also known as a triangular bandage, is arguably the most multi-purpose and practical item that you could possibly put in a first aid kit. Its uses are legion, from slings, bandages, and wraps, to pre-filters for dirty water, head or face coverings to protect from sun, smoke, or dust, and more. Flexible padded aluminum splint. Lightweight, malleable, and easily cut, aluminum makes an excellent splinting material. Padded, flexible, reusable aluminum splints are often called SAM splints, after the brand name version, in which SAM stands for Structural Aluminum Malleable. A splint can, of course, be made from anything that is relatively rigid, such as cardboard, newspaper, tree bark, wood, and so on. However, an aluminum splint that comes in a packable roll form has many uses, from splinting broken bones to stabilizing injured joints. SAM-style splints are made in a variety of different sizes. It's generally best to buy the largest size, as they can be easily cut or folded down as necessary. Occlusive dressing. An occlusive dressing, sometimes called a chest seal, is an airtight, watertight, self-sealing bandage. It has many applications, but is primarily used to seal a chest wound that may have caused an opening into the lungs. It can be improvised using plastic and tape, but the quality of an improvised occlusive dressing can be poor, especially on a hairy, dirty, or bloody chest. Ready-made chest seals, like the Hyphen brand, take little room and add almost no weight to a first aid kit, and they are very quick and effective in case of chest wounds when seconds may count. Tourniquet. Similar to a ready-made occlusive dressing, a tourniquet is one of the few pre-made single-purpose items you might want in a first aid kit. There are many different styles and brands. Look for one that can be applied with one hand, in case you ever need to put it on your own arm, and is close to an inch wide to avoid the tissue damage caused by narrower widths.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?